Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
I don't know what happened. My mom didn't show up. I got some guy walked through, applauded, and left. I think she paid him off. Hi, this is, welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH as Hoy Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky and Alabama. And they do this for us as a public service presentation. We would also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of our finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. Not lately, they're not really. I've sent them some stuff. They're not buying yet. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, which Harold B., which is not only the co-host tonight. Well, he's not really my co-host tonight. He's the interview. Harold hasn't had an opportunity to tell us his story, and so we're gonna be a treat with that. Harold's a family intervention specialist, and he does a fine work with troubled families. And I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the country, the nation, and the world. As a matter of fact, today at church, we were talking about that. You teach your children correct principles, and then they teach themselves. And I found in Proverbs, it says, teach your children when they're young, and they will carry it on when they get older. Paraphrase. So there's a spiritual understanding about teaching children. Harold will get a little bit more into that. Harold also goes to the prisons. He has to some extent, a prison ministry where he goes and ministers to the alcoholic and to the drug addict and the people who are in there, which is the majority of them are alcoholic and drug-related crimes. People don't realize that when children grow up and they're not taught these correct principles, they end up learning from the mean streets. I call them empty lot weed kids, latchkey kids. And they get into gangs, into groups, into the clubs, and what they do for entertainment, it goes like this. Trish Murphy does this. It's a song lyric. When you're young and dumb, it started out as a double dog dare. When you're young and dumb, the trouble with trouble is it starts out as fun. So, Harold, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Joseph. Thanks for having me on. And thanks for putting together the web page and the radio program. I think it's great. It's a great way to give back, and it's a great way to help people understand what the 12 steps are really all about. It's all about working with others, and I appreciate your focus over all these years in that regard. If people really want to do something that works, they will find ways to help other alcoholics and or drug addicts and or people with codependency. Some of the people suffering the most that I've met recently are people with codependency. So we'll talk about that a little bit tonight. Before we get started, I'd like to in acting as the co-host, I'd like to just explain to our listeners that this is not a money-making proposition. This is our way of giving back. Joseph makes no money from the website or the radio program. In fact, it costs him a lot of money to keep it going, but he does that as his way of giving back. And everything's done on a volunteer basis, and but it really works. It's one of the many ways to stay sober, and we hope that you gain something tonight that will really benefit your recovery and your sobriety, and help you with all your relationships. It's really about relationships. So the call-in number, if you're listening live, Sundays at 9 Central, the call-in number is 949-534-0621. You can call in and participate, 949-534-0621. So I'll turn it back over to you, Joseph.
Thank you. You're going to say Dick. You were going to say Dick.
I was going to say
it
David.
Happens.
I don't know why David.
I've been called worse. We put the website out for the benefit of people in recovery. Although there's a lot of good information on the site, even if you're not in recovery, it gives you a heads up of what it looks like. And also, most folks know someone who has a problem with some form of addiction. Whatever it is, it might be cigarette smoking, it might be television watching, it's any type of form of distraction. I like to say addiction, I make it real simple, it's something you can't stop even at a red light. It becomes an ingrained habit, and then it becomes an addiction where you're not able to do on your own, where it takes. We believe a lot of this stuff is a spiritual malady. We believe it's a malady of mind, body, and spirit, and mostly spirit. It's a spiritual distraction. Life most oftentimes is hard. And when I realized that, it got easier. And sometimes from the pain of life, the drugs and alcohol seem like a good alternative. But it's a temporary fix at best. And then there's hell to pay at the end of it. So having said that, we're on a lot of Facebook. We do a lot of Facebook stuff, trying to get the word out on Rum Radio. The interesting thing about it is that I have some detractors. I had one fellow from New Zealand, and we got into this back and forth and back and forth, and he has a real hard time. The funny thing about it is he won't look at Rum Radio. He's already made his decision about what we're doing and is trying to whatever he can do to stall that. And he's not the first one. This happens fairly from time to time. There'll be someone. We don't ask anybody that have to do anything. You know, we just ask you to keep an open mind. The mind is like a parachute. It works best when open. So keep an open mind. Take a look. If you find something good in there and it would help you to do, that's great. If you go on there and you say, well, this isn't for me, you know what? That's okay, too. But now you've looked. One of the precepts in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is contempt prior to investigation. Nothing will hold a man in utter ignorance or bar from any argument is that the concept of contempt prior to investigation. It's in there. It's in the big book because the alcoholic is the extreme example of most negative behaviors. So that's why it's in there. Principles before personalities. I don't like the guy. It doesn't resonate with me. So whatever he has to say, the principles, it goes to waste. And then, of course, open-mindedness. You know, we know so very little. More shall be disclosed to both you and to us if your own house, which is your spiritual house, in order. So if you have a spiritual lilt to you, you'll see Rum Radio. If you don't, you won't. So, Harold, I like to start with the third step prayer. It's on page 63 of the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous called the Big Book. Now, we're not AA. We're not NA, and we're not CA. We're more like Paranoids Anonymous. The problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. I mean, once you stay with us for an hour, you might think it's Narcoleptics Anonymous. No, it should be really good. I'm really interested to hear. I've never heard Harold's story, and he's feeling a little ill tonight with his throat, so this is really a big challenge for us tonight, and it just happened to work out that way. So thank you so much, Harold, for taking that effort and that time.
You're welcome.
The third step prayer is found on page 63. I like to use the Big Book because the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is where the original 12 steps are found. All 12-step programs derive from the basic text. Now, things have changed. You know, there's the NA book and the CA book and SA and Sex Addicts Anonymous. And I like to think I'm a part of On and On Anonymous. There's many 12-step programs. I forget some of the count. I'm like a huge number. But they're all based on the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Usually, the only difference is the first step, which mentions the disease or the problem, which in AA it's alcohol, in NA it's narcotics, in CA it's cocaine, marijuana, you get the drift. Other than that, they basically stay about the same because we found the solution is in the other 11 steps, and we call that a design for living. So I like to go back to the basic text because that's the template. And usually when you get back to the basic template, the information is clearer and easier to discern, my experience. And on page 63 of this book, there's the third step prayer. There's 12 steps. This is on the third step. I usually give this prayer early on to a sponsee who's just come from prospect. I prospected him. That's a sales term. I qualified the prospect. He's agreed he's had enough pain, enough sorrow, enough alcohol, enough humiliation, enough alcohol. And he's agreed to that. And he's also agreed he's willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety. And he's agreed to those two formats. Okay, now you're a sponsee. I'm willing to sponsor you. Until then, it isn't really worth my time or his time. We just tell him, just keep coming back. Some people get it slowly, some quickly. I like to hear quickly and quicker and quickly, but we do quickly and slowly. And some people just have to marinate in their disease for a while before they're ready to give it up and give in. But, you know, we can't call the shots. We can only present it to them. That's all we do. We present hope. This is the hope. If you do what we do, you're going to get what we get. There's the preamble. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our steps. There are those, too, who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They're such unfortunates. They seem to be blonde that way, not just born that way. There's those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but they too can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. Simple program, not easy, but that's it. That's it in a nutshell. If you're willing to do what we do, you'll get what we get. So one of the assignments of the new sponsee is I suggest he gets a home group. Now, this is not in the Big Book. It doesn't say to get a home group. It doesn't spell that out. But we've had 79 years, or not quite, I think 1939 was the publication of the Big Book. It was 4 years after the inception of Alcoholics Anonymous. Really, the agreement is if two or three people get together with no other affiliation, they can call themselves an AA group. Of course, you look back into the scriptures, the big book we call it. It says, when two or three are gathered in my name, I shall be amongst them. So that's where that comes from. But the first group really was Dr. Bob, Bill W., and Bill D. in the hospital. Those were the first three members of AA, and that was the first group. And if you look at their professions, one was a doctor, Bill D. was a lawyer, and Bill W. was the architect of AA, the chief architect. So we had a doctor, a lawyer, and an Indian chief. I like that, Harold?
Yes.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit more, yeah, it brings it back to life. It's called The Man on the Bed. If you ever see the picture, it's an iconic painting, a similitude or similarity of what happened in 1939. He's got a book in his hand. The big book was written in 1939. No, this is 35, but the big book didn't come out until 4 years later. So more than likely he had the Bible in his hand. That was the only book that was allowed in the hospitals at the time. So it started out at a very higher Christian ethic than it is today, because the agreement is God of your understanding, or it's referred to as higher power. And that higher power can be anything, an agreement of an entity, a power, or structure, which has a greater impact than you do, in simplest terms. So people like to go that way, you know, easing God a little bit out more and more, I think, as the years go on. But that's generally what our society looks like today. So I don't really see that just as AA, but it's a microcosm of what's going on. So I give them the assignment, get a home group. And the home group is where they're going to go regularly for their meetings, one. Two, they connect up in there. I want you to get the name of some men in there, as many as you can. Sometimes they give a newcomer's packet, little sundry of where the meetings are, other meetings, information, what's an alcoholic, how do you know, things like that. I really like the clubs that do that and the groups that do that. Some don't. But they usually have a name, so you can go early to the meeting and ask the chairperson, give them a piece of paper and say, could you pass this around? I need men's names. Men with men, women with women is the suggestion. It's easier to relate to the same sex. One, two, it's less complicated. It could be, sponsorship is an intimate relationship, especially when you're working through the steps with someone. And that intimacy can be easily misconstrued. So that's why put an extra hurdle in there if it's not necessary. But the agreement is you work the steps. So if you have a different sex, different gender sponsee or sponsor, and it's working out, you know what? Go for it. You can change sponsors anytime. Yes, anytime. If it's not working, the agreement is you tell, look, this isn't working. What do we need to fix it? If we're not able to fix it because of a personality conflict, or maybe the sponsor really doesn't know what they're doing, but they mean well. You know, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. You get some folks that have a really good intention, but haven't got a clue what a sponsor does or doesn't do. So anytime that happens, you can say, hey, look, I need somebody else. Help me find somebody. Oh, okay. But nobody knows that. You don't know that until it's way later. You know, that's why we did Rum Radio. We tell you that stuff. That's what we tell you. Hey, what do you know? One stop shop. We'll tell you exactly what the roadway looks like. You don't have to guess. You don't have to shoot craps and hopefully you're going to hit a seven instead of snake eyes. You know, here you go. There's the roadmap. And if you have the names, call them every day for the next 30 days and get permission to recite the third step prayer. One, it gets them used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Hard for most. I can do it myself. I don't need anybody. Some folks don't even like to get a sponsor. I have the big book. The big book is a design. I can do that without a sponsor. No, it doesn't work that way. Sponsor is about accountability. It's when the need of the bleed for accountability comes, that's where the sponsor comes. And you want someone who's gone through the steps and has come out through the other side. Now he can help you get to where he's at. You can't really do it yourself. On the website, I have a fellow doing a do-it-yourself lobotomy. And that's the way it would be without working the steps without a sponsor. It's like doing your self-inflicted lobotomy. And the other reason I have him call up on the third step prayer is that he connects up with his fellowship group. They get to know his name, and he gets to know their name. Thirdly, it's also the third step prayer is called a surrender prayer. And this is what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And fourthly, and consider this, the person he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink, his first hit of crack, his first whatever, and the chances are once you say the prayer to him, the conversation will start, and both of you are helping keep each other sober, and this is the way this thing works. Helping the other guy helps me stay sober. The one immunity we have from alcohol, fill in the blank, is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities fail. So this is the strongest insurance we have. We have no guarantee, but this is an insurance, an immunity, is working with that other alcoholic. Sponsorship. On the 12 and 12, which is another book I like, it came up about 12 years later. It was the experiences from the men and women who were using the big book in sponsorship and came up to a higher level of experience. And in the 12 and 12 on step 5, it says, until we've spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So what's that saying? I have to speak a fifth step, which is a form of telling somebody else, another human being, what you did, what was all the wrongs you did, and how you, you know, and taking accountability for your life. And once you've done that, when you've told another person, so you got you, God, and the other person. So we have to speak that. Now it says, until we've done that and done the same with us, heard a fifth step. Oh, man, who hears a fifth step? A sponsor usually hears a fifth step. So until you heard a fifth step, you still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So until you heard a fifth step, you were just circling the field, waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline, and then it's another crash and burn. So when those two components of a recovery are agreed to in mass, I could see a change coming in AA. You know, that's a back-to-basics approach. That's not a good word. One of the fellows did a book on back to basics, and there's a little controversy about it. When I say back to basics, I'm not advising any specific format. The back to basics is how they worked it originally, where you went through the steps in a very timely manner and then jumped in and got your own sponsee and started taking them through the steps, because you really don't know the steps. You don't really learn the steps until you teach the steps. That's when you really get it. When you're giving it away, that's when you get it. You get it? And this is the prayer.
Yeah.
You got it?
Yep.
God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. Yes.
So I'm trying to be a little chatty because I know you're going to run out of gas sooner than later. So, but I'm real interested, Harold, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and what keeps you in maximum service to God and your fellows. So tell us. Tell me, Harold, what was it like?
Well, I started drinking when I was about 20. A lot of people my age say they started in high school, but I didn't. I was about 20, and by that time, married 2 years. I married when I was 18, and we had a couple kids 20 months apart. And so at that point, some of my friends were coming back from Vietnam, and there were neighborhood parties and so forth. Now, I didn't really know about the genetic connection, and my dad drank like a fish. His dad drank like a fish. My mom's dad drank heavily. And so I didn't know enough to be on alert to what alcohol could do. And so we began drinking, and it didn't take long for that to, for the solution. And it really felt great. Alcohol was a solution to my problems. But it didn't take long for the solution to become the problem. And both for my wife and for myself. And
then, how old were you when you first drank?
20.
The first time? 20, okay. Yeah, did you ever hear this? The man takes a drink, the drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes a man.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. And we had, growing up, there had been some times when, you know, a lot of parents think it's cute to give the kids some beer and watch what happens to them when they get kind of tipsy. And that had happened a couple of times, but I didn't really seek it out till I was about 20. And then friends were coming home from Vietnam and sharing their experiences, which included marijuana. So smoking pot. And of course, when people start smoking pot, they keep it in the attic. We did. Well, that's what we did. We were really quite afraid of the illegality, and of course that heightened the sense of excitement around everything. And so I would go up into the attic and find a little baggie and roll some joints and so forth. But the way things go, we smoked more and more, little by little, and it's one of those things that it's like the grass in the backyard. Pretty soon you turn around and it's all the way up to your knees with that gradual increase. And the negative influence from the people that we have to get illegal drugs from, I think, was a major factor also. And there's a lot of times there's that day when you go to get what you wanted, they don't have exactly what you wanted, but they recommend something else. And so then we got involved with hallucinogens, with LSD, blotter acid, with mushrooms. And this was all in the Northwest. And at that point, If you knew what you were doing, you could go out into the pastures and find your own magic mushrooms. However, they did look similar to the ones that'll kill you. So who knows how many people have liver damage because they poisoned themselves with the wrong mushroom. But that's,
what did they call that? Psilocybin? Is it psilocybin?
Psilocybin mushrooms.
Yeah.
And, or magic mushrooms. Horrible taste. And so we would go from one thing to the other, become bored with that. My experience is that marijuana is a gateway drug. We get bored with it, and then we move on to other things. And that's what happened to me. Then it was cocaine and stimulants and MDMA, That actually is an animal tranquilizer, but it's now it's called ecstasy. But it can cause a lot of damage very quickly if a person isn't lucky. And so nobody in our crowd was ever damaged, but we did, well, in any way that we can tell. But there were parties and drugs, and people were taking, people didn't know what they were taking often. I remember a friend of a friend getting really overdosed on something and was running around the house and headed right for the picture window. And this was many years ago, in the 60s and 70s. And if you go through a picture window back in that time, a lot of the glass was not tempered glass. It would break into large pieces, which, as they fall, become guillotines. And we tackled this guy right before he went through the glass. And there were several guys there, but it took all of us to keep this guy from hurting himself. And one of the guys suggested that we find some rope and hog tie this guy. So we did that. We tied his hands and his feet all together behind his back. And then we lifted him up and put him in the back of a Chevy van and headed to the emergency room. And as many of you may know, the people on drug overdoses often have superhuman strength, which he did. And he broke out of those ropes and almost killed both of us on the way to the hospital. So it was just crazy times and just a mess. And we thought we were keeping that secret from the kids the whole time. We would wait till they went to bed. But as things progress, the youth gets to be more and more and more frequently, greater amounts. And we started what the kids nowadays call wake and bake. That's where you, first thing in the morning, you light up a marijuana cigarette, a joint. And so we smoked from the time we woke up to the time we went to bed, and took other drugs. And we'd sometimes we'd take too much of a stimulant, so we'd take some depressants to balance that out, and we'd take too many depressants, so we'd need more stimulants, and it's back and forth. And looking back on it now, it turned out to be very, very dangerous. And we didn't run over anyone we know about. I would drive under the influence, and we thought we were hot shots, fooling the police and staying one step ahead of the law. But it was just out of control. And the main thing that woke me up was when my son, who gave me permission to talk about him if it will help someone, or else I would keep this all totally confidential. But he had a problem. As a member of the football team and having a bad season, a lot of the players began smoking marijuana to soothe their emotions, to self-medicate. And then it led from there to needing some excitement, and so they did hallucinogens daily in high school, their senior years. And it didn't take long for him to to scare himself, and he came to us, his mom and dad, and said, I'm scared. I'm doing this every day, and it scares me. So we put him in rehab, and part of the rehab is the family meetings. And in the family meetings, we got some very serious talkings to from the staff, and began to see what we thought was recreational is actually dependence. I think that's the key word for me, the word dependence. And anything I'm dependent on, I'm a slave to. And I didn't want to be a slave to anything. So his counselor challenged us to do an experiment, challenged me to go ahead and just quit for 6 or 8 months and see how I felt. And I thought, well, okay. Because at that point, I really wasn't drinking that much. But the other things that were going on were really habitual, and I had developed several dependencies. And so I quit, and I had heard about the 12 steps and heard about AA, and so I thought I would sit in and just listen. And that's what's really magnificent about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the other anonymous programs, Overeaters Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, NA, MA, Marijuana Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous. And nowadays, it's really prevalent to for guys to attend Sex Addicts Anonymous.
Yeah, my first sponsor was SA. He did SA as well, and I think on the web on Facebook they have a SA AA where there's a lot of sex addicts, alcoholics. You know, there's the dual addiction stick going. But tell me now, you would say your bottom was really a logical, cognitive thought that you're not in control.
Well, that took some time. I went to some meetings and listened to some people and began hearing my story come out of other people's mouths. And then a friend of mine from high school died. And that really got my attention. And having my kids messed up, two of my kids that were either drinking too much, taking hallucinogens, smoking pot, and also a spouse that was had various things going on. What was valuable to me is quitting and then listening to what I learned to call the enemy voice, and then going to meetings and hearing other people's experience with the enemy voice. And I could tell that quitting was fairly easy. But staying stopped is what was really a challenge. And I had several close calls. In fact, I went ahead and put myself in residential treatment at one point early on, and that really, really helped a lot. So after a few years of abstinence from everything, and I had to quit everything. It's either all or nothing for me. I didn't like try to cut back or do nowadays what's called harm reduction, just cut back or take holidays away from it. I just totally stopped and started going to meetings. And I had a rough time at the five-year mark. The enemy voice was saying, look at you. You're hot stuff now. You've got 60 months, total abstinence.
Were you working the steps? Did you work the steps? Did you get a sponsor? Did you do any of that?
Yes, I had a great sponsor, a great big guy, about 6'5", 300 pounds.
How long were you going in? Did he find you? Did you find him?
I was going to a great meeting where they encouraged us to get a sponsor. They encouraged the people to raise their hands if they would be a sponsor. And so I approached this guy because they said quitting is fairly easy. Staying stopped, you really need to work the steps. And my friend had died, and so I thought, well, I better do what they're suggesting. And
Let me ask you this, Harold. The big book says go find a prospect and start working on them. And then it says if you find someone and they're not interested in what you have, don't waste your time. Go find someone else who's desperate enough to want what you have. So those two directions say that the fellow is supposed to go out, the person who has some time and has worked the steps is supposed to go out and get a sponsee. What do you think the change came from? What did you raise your hand if you're available to sponsor? The new guy has no idea of the jargon, the culture, the lay of the land, but he's supposed to go find someone that has what he wants because you don't really typically know what you want. You just know you're in pain. And then it takes a while. So you have to actually sit in a lot of meetings before you actually kind of get the lay of the land, so to speak. What do you think that happened?
I went to 1,000 meetings in the first little over 2 years. And that really helped me a lot. I'm kind of hard-headed. So it started to sink in. I got to listen to a lot of stories, a lot of people talk. I didn't say much, listened. And so it was very confusing at first to sit in the meetings and figure out what is this lingo. There's kind of speaking a different language. And what am I supposed to do? You can see the 12 steps on the wall, and then they told us, well, the 12 steps are really not on the wall there. Those aren't the 12 steps. The 12 steps are in the book. The first 164 pages give you directions on how to work the 12 steps. So I wasn't opposed to reading, so I went ahead and read. I read all that. I read the stories in the back, and so it started to fall into place, and I like listening to tapes, and back then I listened to the Charlie and Joe tapes, and that helped a lot too. Just a lot of repetition is what I needed. So I approached this guy, and they called him the book Nazi. He was so dedicated to the book and doing it by the book. And I thought, well, I can't really go wrong with this guy if he really sticks to the book. And I liked what he had to say in the meetings, and so he was my first real sponsor. He said a couple of things that really helped me a lot. He said, you notice not every time you drank did you get in trouble, but every single time you were in trouble, you'd been either drinking or drugging. And I had to say, well, yeah, you got me there. That is true. And he said that your drugs and alcohol are a search for God at the wrong address. And I was interested in God. I was agnostic at the time, and I wasn't really sure. So my first higher power was the group itself, and that seemed to work pretty good. He instructed me, make no decision alone, none, zero. Check in with us, make every decision after you've checked in on things. And so my first marriage was disintegrating at that point. And so I checked with them and read some more, and it really, but it didn't take long until my sponsor was calling up and wanting me to go along on these mission trips out to see other people that were drinking and asking for help and to check in with their families. And that was something that really, really was an important part of my early recovery. And I really don't see it much anymore in AA. I wonder what happened to that, because that was very, very important to me, that we would help guys that were drinking too much and gals, but we would also talk to the spouses and the kids, because I've come to find out it's a family illness. It has to be a family solution.
So you're talking about the 12-step calls?
Yeah.
Well, you know, in Harris County, which is the largest county in Houston, there's a 250-person waiting list to go on 12-step calls.
That people registered out?
Yeah, 250 people have registered with Intergroup, and most of the phone calls are coming in through, you know, AA advertises a public service, so the numbers are available, phone book and things, Yellow Pages. And so they'll call in, someone's desperate, and they'll call in, and they'll go to Intergroup, and then Intergroup will assign, you know, okay, look, we got this is the next guy up, we'll call him up. Yeah, we got a guy that's looking. So they'll go down. The problem is the 250 waiting list is because most people are going to rehab now. They didn't have that choice prior, and most people would prefer to buy their way in. One, two, they might need a detox. So going to AA is not going to help you if you need a detox. You got to detox off the drug. They used to do that in the clubs. They called it bug juice, but that's not really recommended. Hospitals and there's facilities that particularly are accustomed and attuned to detoxing alcoholics, but some don't. If you're not going through detox, there's no reason to go to a rehab, in my opinion, but people do, and I believe they do that because they're trying to buy their way into recovery. It's easier, softer way. You know, I'll be sequestered for 28 days, even though it's going to cost about $30,000, and this way I'll have that kickstart. And it does work for some, but even after your $30,000, they're going to tell you if you don't go to AA and maintain a program, you just wasted your money. So you pay $30,000 for a big book, basically. That's why the 12-step calls aren't being done like they used to be, and that was a big loss to us. See, my suggestion is it's to partner up, and I told you that, and you said there's a HEPA laws, but to try to at least bring meetings into the rehabs. I think that's the way to go, since they've already herded them up, and then we can work out from there. But anyway, that's why. That's why the 12-step calls are not I don't know about other parts of the country, but that's the way it is here. And since rehabs are such a huge industry, I would imagine it's probably nationwide. Harold?
So you know about a rehab that's only $30,000 a month? Well, I'll have to get with you off the air and get that number.
Oh, they're more than that, huh?
That's a bargain. So I worked the steps with this sponsor, pen and paper, and I was really slow, and but I didn't relapse. I lived to tell my story, so it worked out all right. And along the way, it really one of the amends on my amends list was my step eight list is all the people that I've harmed. And my sponsor said, "Well, don't forget to put your own name on that list, because you've harmed yourself a lot." And I did that. And one of the amends, sometimes the amends have to be living amends. And so one of the amends was for me to go ahead and finish my college education. And so everything came into focus at that point, and I really had a desire, also because as a boy, 8, 9, 10, 11, I was molested by older half-brothers. It was my desire to really help kids. And I was good at it. And so at the university, as I took counseling and psychology with an interest in child psychology, it became clear pretty quickly that 1 hour a week with a child really wasn't going to help as much as if I could help the parents. If we can get the parents on the right track, a week has 168 hours in it. If we can get all those hours, get the parents on the right track with healthy parenting approaches, and that's really the way to help the kids, because the kids will emulate their parents anyway. So I got into family therapy, and as soon as I began my internship in family therapy, it became painfully obvious to me that over half of the problems in these families were drugs and alcohol on the part of the parents or the kids or both. So I immediately went back and got certified as a drug counselor, alcohol and drug counselor, and then used that as a dual approach to parenting coaching, marriage counseling, family therapy, working with the kids and with the adults. I had the privilege of running drug and alcohol groups for teens in Beaverton, Oregon, quite an exclusive area to live in. And so it was very, very satisfying. I enjoy counseling people who will really pick up the ball, accept some direction, and pick up the ball and run with it. Many times the pay was real low, but to work with people that will really get behind the wheel and push is really satisfying. It's really great to be able to see change occurring. In a lot of counseling fields, not much change occurs, but in drug and alcohol counseling, it really does. So I enjoyed myself. I am still in that field. And along the way, the wonderful people in the 12-step meetings, and I went to a lot of AA and a lot of NA, Narcotics Anonymous. I enjoy the NA approach very much because they also mention that if we view alcohol differently, we are going to be in trouble. Alcohol is a drug, and if we use any drugs, we're going to release our addiction all over again. I really like Narcotics Anonymous and got a lot of good from that. And so I attended lots of meetings, and I've run some of the rehab groups and so forth. Now, the rehabs charge high prices, and of course the 12 steps are free to anyone who wants to pick up the books. So they have an ethical dilemma. If you're paying $30,000 and then they're giving you the AA principles, which you can achieve, which you can acquire for free anywhere, they just have an ethical dilemma around that. But they do, as you said earlier, they do tell people, when you get out of here, you've got to get some peer support. That's what they call it, peer support. And there's no substitute for that. And they'll even go as far as to say, you've got to find some way to give it away. If you want to keep it, you've got to give it away. And so that is exactly where Rum Radio is focused. And that's why I'm part of Rum Radio and rumradio.org.
Joseph? So tell me, Howard, you came in, you were an agnostic or an atheist? What was your flavor of
I really didn't know. I really enjoyed the positive thinkers, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, and they usually mention God in their writings. So of course, I just didn't know what to make of the Bible, and I had gotten some bad advice from my mom. My dad was an atheist. My mom described herself as a recovering Catholic. And she had a very mixed up view of the Bible and taught us boys that it was full of error. And a closer study, and now that science has been catching up, really shows that it's not full of errors. The errors are only apparent. They're not truly errors. As we get with archaeology and anthropology that helps us with the calendars and so forth, we can see that things are very, very accurate, amazingly accurate in the Bible. So that, reading Lee Strobel, he was an attorney who really needed some proof that the Bible's accurate. So there's a lot now to help people that are that have been fed a pack of lies. And so, bless her heart, my mom's deceased now, but she was fed a bunch of lies, and then she passed those on to us. So my sponsor said, you're not going to get very far with contempt prior to investigation. And he said, have you even read it? And I had to admit, as part of my 10th step, that I hadn't. So when I started, he said, well, let's take a look at what Jesus had to say. Start there. And so I started reading. Well, as many of you may know, when you start reading the Bible, especially if you're doing it prayerfully, it really comes alive. It is the living Word of God. And so, excuse me. So I've learned more and more about it. It's also helpful to get a great Bible teacher, because you can't just read it like a novel from beginning to end. You have to flip back and forth, Old Testament to New Testament, and let it corroborate itself, which it does. So with an expositional preacher and a study Bible, and for me, several Bibles, and audio tapes, which are now MP3s, I've been studying the Bible for years, and I am absolutely in love with it. It's just become obvious that God is a God of second chances. He loves us no matter what. Now, His presence, His love is unconditional. His presence is conditional. And if we, in order to experience God's presence, we do have to have faith. We have to believe. And if we refuse to believe, He's not going to force His presence on anyone that doesn't want it. And if we are willing to believe, then we can experience His love, His presence, His forgiveness, and His eternal life. So I'm a follower of Jesus Christ and really dedicated. I love what He loves and hate what He hates, and study constantly just to learn more about Him so I can be more. And that all started at AA with the 12 steps. They weren't even going to call it AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. They were going to call it originally, they were going to call it the James Group, from the book of James, this came from the book of Matthew, chapter 5, Sermon on the Mount, the book of James. All the steps are from the scriptures. And now somehow along the 78 years, they've gotten separated somehow, but that doesn't erase the fact that that's where they're from. And so, so I'm a Christian counselor now, and I work at the Houston Center for Christian Counseling. We've got a great website, ChristianCounselingHouston.com. And so the main difference with Christian counseling is that regular counseling, you won't hear anything about the enemy, really. Well, in my recovery life, understanding the enemy voice and the fact that the addiction is one of the tricks of the enemy was really important. So with Christian counseling, you'll hear the whole story about what you can do to help yourself and what you can do to recognize the lies and tricks of the enemy so you don't fall into those traps. Now, in the recovery world, that's called relapse prevention. Dr. Terry Gorski is really the world's expert on that now. But also, the Bible is expert on that as well. So I'm really honored to work at such a great counseling center. I've never worked with such an efficient staff or such an effective group of counselors as the bunch at Houston Center for Christian Counseling. It is really amazing. I've been in the field 25 years. And, it is truly amazing.
So how would we get a hold of you? The website is what again?
The website is ChristianCounselingHouston.com. All one word. ChristianCounselingHouston.com.
Now, for some of the listeners that are not in Houston and they can't, is there any way to contact you or any counseling over the phone or the internet or anything? Is that available?
I do help people with recovery counseling. I have a sliding scale so that we can find a price that works in your budget for every counseling session once a week. It's really important to get on this and stay consistent. So I have a scale that allows that, and they can find me at familytherapyhaven.com. Familytherapyhaven.com. That's all one word. And I do a lot of, I have the honor of doing a lot of interventions. I don't charge for interventions, but they've become kind of popular and on TV and so forth. But if you have a loved one that has a problem with alcohol or drugs, and people are telling you, oh, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, don't believe that. That is a lie. That is one of the enemy's lies. What you can do is make the horse really thirsty and lead him to a well. So I recommend putting all the pressure you can on people, that all the legal pressure, don't kidnap them or something illegal, but I believe in putting all the pressure possible on people to force them to get into recovery and begin working the 12 steps. If something awful happens and you haven't done everything you possibly can, it will really follow you for years, even decades, the regret, thinking, well, if only I had tried this. So you've got to give it every effort you can. So that's how to reach me.
Oh, by the way, we have you had written that article for Rum Radio, how to perform an intervention.
Oh yes,
so we have that on the website. It's under the captain's table. It's in the first couple posts. But it gives you the letter, gives you all the understanding that you put down there. It was a great piece to, as a permanent post on the a permanent page on the rumradio.org website. So that remains available to anybody who's interested. All you got to do is it's a point and a click, folks. No money.
That's
wow.
Great.
Can't beat that with a stick. Yeah.
And let me mention that if you're getting ready to do an intervention, you need to have everybody that's going to participate write a five-part letter. And the outline for that letter is on the website that Joseph just mentioned.
Well, thank you so much, Harold. I know this was really quite a challenge and a trial for you tonight. I know you're probably going to hang up the phone and jump into bed if you can make it that far. You know, when you're getting old, you know how you know you're getting old? You have to take a nap before you go to bed. Anyway, thanks so much, and appreciate your time and your effort like usual, and for the support you've given us over the years now.
Yes, it's really great to get the word out that we've got to work with other people, and I appreciate what you're doing, Joseph, what you've been doing and you continue to do at your own expense. That's good stuff. And folks, I hope you got some value tonight. I hope you have some ideas that you can apply and really strengthen your own recovery. And for you codependents out there, we want you to learn to take better care of yourself and to make healthy boundaries. So the 12 steps will also help you. I know that you think, it's my husband, my boyfriend, my parents who have the problem. I don't really have the problem. I don't want to go to groups. And just take a look at some of the ideas on codependency, because the 12 steps can help anyone on earth. They really can. You don't have to have an addiction or a drinking problem to benefit from the 12 steps. It's a new plan for living, and we can all benefit from that. And if you really do have a loved one who's having a drug or alcohol problem, it really helps if you will learn the lingo. And so you can do that by learning the 12 steps and seeing how all this works. Then as they're recovering, you'll really be able to communicate much better. And it may help you form healthy boundaries in your life. That's what you need. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Well, you know, I see a day in the distant future where a chicken can cross the road and his motives won't be questioned.
That's no, the way to that one. Yeah.
It's a cute. I love that when I heard that. Why is a chicken cross the road? We're not going to ask the question anymore. That's going to be tough. Anyway, so thanks again. And in closing, I'd like to say that we're in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,800 towns, cities, and villages, and between 300,000 and 400,000 hits to the website. It's taken about 4 years. It's still moving around, so people find a lot of benefit. I really haven't met anybody who's actually gone to the site and had a problem with it. Most of the people who have a problem with Rum Radio is that they have contempt prior to investigation. They just don't want to look. There's none so blind as those that refuse to see, and I'm afraid they're still out there. The good news is that we don't have to deal with pitchforks and torches anymore. So it's sticks and stones, but if the word's getting out. It's a good word. It'll help people. It has helped people. I know personally it saved at least one guy's life. It's a great story, and I'll tell you sometime. But it does. It has that kind of power in it. It's spiritual, it's humorous, and it's programming, because that's all we need. So, and again, if you're looking for sponsorship information and you want to really get on to what this thing is all about, it's Rum Radio and rumradio.org. So remember, see you on the radio. Good night.
Good night.